Welcome to a new episode of the Film at Lincoln Center podcast. This week, we're excited to present a conversation with Omen director Baloji from this year's edition of New Directors, New Films. The sense of dread that often accompanies being around blood relatives with whom you share no real connection is brought into vivid focus in songwriter and rapper Baloji's debut feature. Having been banished to Europe as a baby, after a birthmark convinced his mother that he must be a sorcerer, Kofi and his white Belgian fiancé embark on a family reconciliation trip to the Democratic Republic of Congo. The kinetic chaos of the return, missed airport transfers and traffic, bloody noses, family gatherings and judgments, sets the stage for a visceral re-immersion tale. Winner of the New Voice Prize at Cannes and selected as Belgium's entry for the 96th Academy Awards, Omen melds the modern and the mystical in mesmerizing fashion. From April 17th through April 25th, Edward Yang's deeply personal epic, A Brighter Summer Day, and his Best Director Cannes-winning Yi Yi return to the big screen at FLC. Likening any one of his films to a very intimate letter to a very good friend, Yang defined the intricacies of interpersonal relationships among different generations and classes with a depth of storytelling and intimacy of style that call for multiple viewings to parse. Get tickets to both Yi Yi and A Brighter Summer Day at filmlink.org/yang. Now please enjoy the conversation between Omen director Baloji and New Directors New Films Selection Committee member Tyler Wilson. Omen is now playing in select theaters, courtesy of Utopia.
Thank you for this film. I will start with a few questions and then we can maybe open it up to the audience. But really, I guess I just want to start by asking you what the initial idea for this film was. Because, I mean, you alluded to this in your introduction, but, I mean, this is a film that doesn't really reveal itself to us until really the very end. I mean, at first we might think this is a film about Kofi, about going home, but once these perspectives shift, the film, I think, opens up into something entirely more, I'd say disarming. I think our initial impressions of characters are, I think, flipped. And even just on a formal level, the film it goes way beyond realism. So yeah, I'm just curious, what the seed of this film was for you, and even if you're just your thinking and your development of this story mirrored sort of the direction the film itself takes.
Wow, there is a lot to say. I don't know. I feel like to give you a very strange answer, but I get rejected by film commission. So in Europe, when you can make your movie, it's because of funding. You call it soft money. And film commission always asked me to make a movie about my own story, about somebody who's living in Europe, going back to Congo. And I was always against that. And the more that I go to commission and they say, no, this is not real cinema, they keep on asking me to tell the story of Kofi and his girlfriend Alice going back to Congo. And me being saying, if we tell the story of Kofi and Alice, we tell the story of the privilege. Because Kofi has a passport, he's about to build a family, and he has people that love him. And if we tell that story, we keep repeating the same old structure, the same old patriarchal structure. We always told the story of the winner, not the loser. Because for me, the main character is the mom. But it was so difficult to convince people that we can tell that story. Because they keep on asking me, we want that Alice has a bigger part in the narrative. And I was like, no, she's just supporting Kofi going back there. And then they were asking me why Kofi is not into conflict. I'm like, this is a cultural thing that we don't go in conflict with parents. And in Europe, people want conflict to create tension and to create some narrative structure. And I was like, no, it doesn't work like this. And we should not repeat this old same story of African cinema.
I came across an interview that you did where you'd mentioned that all of your work is based on your name. And I'm wondering if you can maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah. So Baloji mean a group of sorcerers. So it's connected to bad force. And it's like here being called devil or demon or Beelzebub or something extremely negative. And every time I go to Congo, every time I meet a Congolese person, it's like, wow, that's your name. Do you know the meaning? I'm like, yeah, I know. And even as a musician, I remember going to radio, they just spell my name, B-A-L-O-G-I, because they don't dare to say it out loud because they're scared that it will give them like a curse. So I'm very interested in that. And yeah, everything is around the social assignment and the way something that you don't decide will define you as a person, as a human being.
Well, I guess on that note, I want to maybe hear more about these four characters that we're following, because I'm especially curious about this counterpoint that you create between Kafi, Shala, Mama Bajila, and Paco. And Paco is, within that group, his connection to them is less obvious. So I'm curious, how he in particular emerged for you and how you kind of saw him fitting into this.
I think I tried to create, so these four characters, because they mirror each other. Kafi and Paco have a lot in common. Kafi is full of fear of the cultural assignments and the religious and the family structure. And Paco is just saying, if you treat me like a dog, I will bite you like a dog. And it's like, if you see me as a sorcerer, I will behave like a sorcerer. But they both have a lot in common beside that, because they're both trying to mourn somebody that they are missing. And they're trying to find a peace of mind around that. And I wanted also to create a parallel between the character of Mama Mujila and Chala, as they mirror each other of two way of existing in their life. And really, for me, this movie is dedicated to all the moms that didn't know that they could choose. They don't know that they have options. So it's beautiful that she see her daughter making choice for herself. Because you grow up with situation, and I think it's even here, we all know somebody who get married and wants to divorce, but don't dare to do it. And this is the whole structure that block people. And I wanted to talk about that and how she understands at a very late moment that she has options. And all her life, no one told her.
I guess I maybe want to hear, more about this in terms of the location in this film. I mean, obviously, outside of where you shot in Belgium, you shot entirely in Congo.
Yeah, it's mostly shot in Congo.
But it's also not any one city, is it?
No, it's it's shot in two cities. So it's basically like shooting a movie between New York and L.A. On the Congolese scales. So it's basically Kinshasa and Lubumbashi. There's two different cities. Kinshasa is like, 15 million plus people living there. It's megapole, like metropolis. Very busy city. And Lubumbashi is more a mine city. So there is no like real center. Everything is more towards the mines and the industry, the business. And that's where I'm from. And so there is like 3,000 kilometers between these two cities, but there is no highway. there's no train route or whatsoever. There is a flight ticket that is more expensive than going to Europe, because there is a political decision behind that, because people in Katanga and Lubumbashi don't want people from Kinshasa to come over and to keep the city away from what they describe as crooks or people that will corrupt their society. And so that's why I mix the two cities as one. And it helped me to create geographically my own universe. So there is nothing tangible. Like there's no New Orleans fanfare in Kinshasa. There's no kids wearing pink dress and stuff like that. It's all the environment that we create, because I just wanted to create that type of narrative.
Yeah. Can you talk more about just your process in creating and designing the visuals? I mean, for example, you worked on the costumes and I think the art direction. For something like that, is that something that you're designing and creating alongside of the writing, or is this pretty specifically
everything
written?
Everything okay. starts with the writing, but in the writing you decide the color, you decide the costumes, you decide the set, the whole structure. For me, the writing is central to everything. And I know it's a little bit difficult because people say, yeah, it's a visual film. And I'm like, it's visual, but I'm trying to tell something also. And it's even maybe more important than the visual look of it. And the fact that it's colorful is also because I'm doing synesthesia. So it hasn't, for me, it's just an extension of what I'm doing. And it's something that is important for me because I'm a self-taught filmmaker. And I just learned by doing. Doing costumes just because I needed to have costume. I'd start doing art design, art direction spontaneously, or acting, or makeup, just because it's really do-it-yourself culture. There is no other solution. It's a movie we shot in 23 days, so there's no budget. So you just have to be extremely prepared, extremely structured, and it's good that you know all the departments. So yeah, I did, I don't know, 25 jobs on this film just because you have no choice.
So, I mean, what was your research process, or what references were you sort of, did you have like top of mind as you were sort of thinking about the visuals, thinking about the sounds? I mean, if we could stay on the visuals a bit more there, I mean, because there are so many striking, memorable images in this film, just to be maybe more specific, I'll shout out the Hansel and Gretel sequence with the faceless witch. And I think there are quite a few fairy tale references across this film. And with this sort of like Lost Boys situation with like the goons and the other gangs. And of course, you mentioned the New Orleans style band. I'm curious if you can just talk about sort of these like cultural correspondences in the film.
Yeah, I don't know. We can use this word, empirical. It's a really, it's accumulation of knowledge a little bit in a very unorganic way. I think the more I research about feminism, the more I see that Disney's Fable or Hans and Gretel, the Grimm's brother, often shows the woman as somebody who's desperate and needs some attention. And because she's, most of the time, it's always a woman that doesn't have kids. So that's why she become this villain. And I thought it was very interesting to work on to understand how it's structured. The cursing, the omen, the bad intention that you give to kids always come from frustration from the character. So I thought it was extreme. It says a lot about our society. So that's why I wanted to work on that aspect and to use that metaphor in the movie, and also to explain how the character of Paco loses his sister and why he's, like you say in the introduction, is trying to reconcile himself and to find peace. And until the moment he doesn't have a grave for his sister, it will not pass to another step in his life. Because he's still mourning his sister until it's factual that she rests in peace somewhere else. Just like Mama Mujila at the very end, yeah.
And you also use Easter weekend as like a framework for the timeline of the film. Can you talk about using that to pace?
Because animism, it's really... something that is really bonded to, it's a root to most African countries, but I have to say that Christian structure is also built on beliefs, and I don't want that people look at this movie as an experience into a land of mystical where there's no structure, because what structure most African country is... The liturgical, how you say this?
Liturgical?
Liturgical. It's a difficult word to say in English. Wow. It's really structured the society. And especially that Easter is like the main week of the Christian calendar. So I thought it was a strong aspect to work on, because it gave us some guideline in the way people articulate their beliefs.
I can ask another question, but maybe we can open up to the audience. Raise your hand and a mic will come to you.
I want to start by saying it was a great movie. I was intrigued. That's why I came, and I got more than I expected of the movie. So I'm really happy that stuff like that exists in the universe. I wanted to ask about the absence of Kofi's dad, because we hear about him, but we never actually see him. We don't even know his name, and he dies at the end. So I want to know why he wasn't there, why we never met him, and why this decision was taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, it's on multiple layers, but... I wanted to treat the miners just like you treat the cellarmen. So you know when they leave, but you never know when they come back. And also, it's also questioning our society how, so we call it a patriarchal society, but it's a matriarchal society in the sense that it's the mom who take over of the household. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the household. And she used the present of the dad, the absence of the dad, as a way to put pressure on the kids. Like, if you do this, your dad will punish you. Or so you always put that presence. Or what will happen if the dad? So it's interesting to see the way the society is structured on that level, on the presence of the dad and his absence. So I wanted to play with these two different levels. Around the dad and the lack of responsibilities that they are dealing with or they don't deal with.
Is there anything that you wish you could have kept or expanded on if you had more time in the film?
I don't know, because I think 1 hour and a half, it's enough. It's a decent length for a first feature film. And I'm very honest. I had a small mood board, and I was like, let's do a movie for the barbershop, and let's do a movie that is less than 1 hour and a half. So I kept that promise to myself and my editor. And I think it's important. No, I really wanted to make a movie with four different characters, but I realized, and I'm going to say that, I hope it doesn't come wrong, but it's really like... It really pissed me off, especially in France, where people were just asking me, please tell the story of Alice until the return of somebody going home. And I'm like, this has been in literature for more than 200 years, the hard, difficult going home process. And I was like, we cannot tell that story. That will be a mistake. We have to change the way we present our characters because we have to stop with this. And most people were just like, yeah, we want to know what happened with coffee. And this is the story. And I was like, no. Yeah. It's a nightmare.
I love the film. Congrats. My question is about casting and how you worked with the actors. I think you did a great job, and I'm just very curious to see what your process was for both of those things.
I think I have a tattoo here saying working with the seriousness of a kid having fun, and that's basically what we try to do, is having fun. And I spend most of my time working with the extras and the kids. And if the extras are good, I think the lead actors will be lift up and it will help them to feel comfortable with the scene. I really spend a lot of time with the non-professional actors to tell them that they were on the same level as the other one. And I was an amateur just like them. I had zero experience. I just wanted to tell a story. And if they do something that I believe in, I was like, the rest of the everybody else will believe in it. So just the whole process was like, let's keep it playful.
Hello. I've watched this movie so many times. And every time that I see it, I have like 1,000 questions bustling in my head. But I have 2 questions for you. One, why magical realism?
The term?
No. The choice of using that as your way of telling the story. And then second, I want to hear more about the three sisters. I really want to because
that's the Disney part. Cinderella.
But it's your take on Disney, which I love. And I want more. So if you could please tell me more about the three sisters within the context of how you explored femmes moving in this cultural context, I would really love it because they're epic. They're amazing.
I forgot your first question.
Why magical realism? Because I know synesthesia has something to do with it, but why did you make this magical in this way?
You see, I always answer with strange... because sometimes it's so we call it magical realism, but at the end it's only poetry, and poetry is just a way to talk about some difficult subject matter. Let's say, for example, the postpartum depression, and when somebody don't want to have a kid, and the breastfeeding becomes a mix of blood and milk, and it's just a metaphor, but maybe some people will think like, oh, it's just trying to make something cool out of it, but for me it's a way to talk about that moment, that special moment in your life that you don't want to give it. And that's why we call it this poetry and this magical realism, that is real emotion, but you don't treat it in a naturalistic way. And I thought it was important to deal with situation like this. And I'm working on the second feature film, and it's even worse. It's just a way to escape reality because, yeah, it's confronting.
Okay, do you have more to say about the three sisters?
The three sisters? I wanted those... Because we all grow up with the church culture, and I wanted to have those characters that are on this thin line between profanity and... righteousness. Yeah, I don't know if you see it. Sorry, my English. Huh? So I want them to be on this line. So they're just in between, and they're trying to pretend for the family, and at the same time they are living their own life. And I wanted them to be the hypocrisy of the culture there.
How did people in Lubumbashi and Kinshasa and in the Congo in general react to your movie?
Oh, it's a good question. Honestly, it went good. There was just one scene that they asked me to blur. It's the scene where Chala is in the toilet on the phone with her boyfriend, because obviously women don't go to the toilet. So beside that, I will say that there is three countries in Africa that ban my movie, that censor my movie, which is Ghana, Cameroon, and I forgot the third one. They don't deserve my respect anyway, because they say that I'm promoting LGBT culture and polyamor culture, and that's quite heavy. And
Balaji, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
For being here.